This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, obviously, unless there's a problem. You may be able to hear it's raining out. And the temperature is gorgeous. We're getting rain. Yay! So, windshield wipers going. And a little air to blow on the windshield where it doesn't get all foggy. It's been a good week. It's been a week of kind of getting back into a schedule. Getting back into a pattern, which my life is pretty well patterned, you know, and so when I get out of the pattern, it's fine, but if there's a lot of things that my focus is, you know, I've got these projects and I'm trying to get them done, then when I disrupt the pattern, it's a little wonky. I told my wife, I think on Monday night or Tuesday night, I think Tuesday night, I said, you know, sweetie, I don't think I ever really relaxed on that vacation we took. And she said, no, I felt the same way. She's working on getting her kids ready for a musical. And so she had that on her mind. But we got to do a lot of interesting things together. And, you know, we got to see new grandniece. And so there was a lot of good things about the trip. It's just, there was a non-trivial amount of driving involved. And, you know, we were kind of upside down on our sleep schedules. So about Tuesday, it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. I think Wednesday for sure. Tuesday, I felt like I was kind of getting, you know, back into the swing of things. And then Wednesday, about halfway through the day, I felt like, okay, I'm back. Kind of felt, you know, whole again. Anyways, but it has been a good week. Was able to get accomplished this week what I wanted to get accomplished. I have a new prototype that I've built that I will be showing off in November-ish, early November. Between now and then, I've got a fairly substantial document to write during the day, so I'll be plugging away on that over the next few weeks. But at this point, it looks like that's all gonna be fine. You know, we'll just keep moving forward. Tonight, I'm hoping to actually start putting some new words down on the book. I did get my read-through finished. I've got Windfall 99-1. That's done now. Books are handed out, done, and done. So now I've got to get back to Windfall Broadcast, and I think I kind of know where I'm going for the rest of the book. I think. Now, no telling where books go. They just kind of go on their own, but I think I know where I'm going for the rest of this book, at least. And I had intended Tuesday, because I finished the read-through on Monday, so I had intended Tuesday to start writing, and then I realized the books were going to be coming in, and I was going to be mailing books to everybody, so I didn't get it started on Tuesday, and then I intended to do it Wednesday, but since we were away on vacation, I hadn't done some of my normal first-of-the-month things, so I was getting all that put together, and then my godson wrote and said, hey, want to chat? And I hadn't chatted with him forever and ever. So we talked last night, had a very nice conversation last night, just talking about this, that, and the other. So tonight, which is usually a short night, because by the time I get the podcast uploaded, get myself some supper and like that, I usually end up with about an hour to write. But tonight, I'm hoping tonight is the night that I get to do some writing on the new. So that'll be good. That'll be fun. And then I will have this weekend to write hopefully get in 5,000 words, hopefully, through this first week, because that's what the schedule calls for, which I think I'll probably be okay. My dad is having a tooth pulled tomorrow, so I'll have to go with him on that, but I can sit in the dentist's office and I can write if they don't mind me going pick while I'm sitting there. And then I should have Friday afternoon, which is 3 or 4 hours. I should be able to get, 750 words, 1,000 words in there. And then on Saturday, I should have a good solid 6 hours or so. And that should give me another 2,000 words or so. Well, no, 1,500 words or so. And I think I've already got about 2,400 words, so I just need about 2,600 words. And we are good to go for this week. So that's good. That's good. What else? Had a lovely breakfast with a friend today. And very interesting conversations. We were supposed to have, we do a once a month breakfast, and it's supposed to be the first Thursday of the month, but I was gone. So we rescheduled for today. And always enjoy getting together, excuse me, with him to chat. What else is going on? That would be about it. I kind of put together a topic hurriedly last night because I was trying to drive to get, driving forward to get to the point where I was going to do some writing before my schedule changed. And so I grabbed a recent article that looked interesting, and there is some interesting things in the article. And I think it bodes for where we're headed. Because it's quite easy for us to look at our lives in the first world, to look at our lives of convenience and comfort and our lifespans and our gadgets and all the things that we have. It's quite easy for us to look at all that and say, progress, ain't it a great thing? And there certainly is some great things about it, but the whole point of the article is that the author was trying to get us to look at progress as not just necessarily a blanket good thing. That there may be some drawbacks to it as well, if we're really willing to look at it. So maybe the article was, is progress good for humanity? And this kind of interested me because I've thought a lot about different ways of living, different societal structures. As you know, if you've listened to any of these things, I'm not necessarily hugely hip to the whole hierarchy thing. No matter how it's organized, whether religiously or for business or entertainment or governmentally or educationally, yes, you can get more done with a hierarchy, but I think inherently a hierarchy requires drones down at the bottom, and the quality of life for those drones is rarely great. And so for that reason, I've, not been extraordinarily fond of hierarchies, and I've tried to avoid them my whole life. And I actually had a friend say, we understand, she said, we've talked enough that I understand how you feel about hierarchies. How do you justify working for hierarchies? And I say in response to that type of question, I don't really work for hierarchies. I go into places where I feel I can make a positive improvement in people's lives. I go into places where I feel like I can help people find meaning in their lives that extends beyond the drudge work that they do simply to put food on the table. Not that I'm not grateful for the money I'm paid. I am grateful and comfortable financially. And far better off than many people are around the world. But that doesn't mean that I am a rah-rah supporter of hierarchy and of structure. And so when I was reading this article, I was, you know, there were some things that were resonating with me. So he starts off, Jeremy Karadonasep, maybe? He starts off in this article talking about the fact that the stock narrative, as he puts it, the stock narrative of the Industrial Revolution is one of moral and economic progress. Indeed, economic progress is cast as moral progress. He says, the story tends to go something like this. Inventors, economists, and statesmen in Western Europe dreamed up a new industrial world. Fueled by the optimism and scientific know-how of the Enlightenment, a series of heroic men, James Watt, Adam Smith, William Huskinson, and so on, fought back against the stultifying effects of regulated economies, irrational laws and customs, and a traditional guild structure that quashed innovation. By the mid-19th century, they had managed to implement a laissez-faire, i.e. free economy, that ran on new machines and was centered around modern factories and the urban middle and the urban working class. It was a long and difficult process, but this revolution eventually brought Europeans to a new plateau of civilization. In the end, Europeans lived in a world based on wage labor, easy mobility, and the consumption of sparkling products. Okay. So, the author tries to make the point that sadly, this story doesn't quite ring true. And he said there have been people who have noted that it doesn't quite ring true. One of them was Joel Moyker. Moyker's 2009, The Enlightened Economy, An Economic History of Britain, 1700 to 1850. Quote, material life in Britain and in the industrial world that followed it is far better today than it could have been imagined by the most wild-eyed, optimistic 18th century philosoph. And whereas this outcome may have been an unforeseen consequence, most economists believe at least that it would be regarded as an undivided blessing. So, actually, that guy's in support of this idea. Anyways. However, you know, when you begin to kind of get beneath that, and then begin to project out, there are some interesting things on the horizon. Because this rise of industrialism gave rise to the factory line worker. And it gave rise to the idea that what we just need is a bunch of bodies. And we just need this stuff to be ratcheted down to the place that we can pick up a body and stuff them in like a cog in the machine and just have them work. And since we've got so many bodies that we can just stuff in where we want them to work, then we don't necessarily need to pay them very much because, after all, they are not artisans. we can just mass produce things. And this whole culture we have of putting together this mass production where we can just flood the market with stuff, and thereby make our lives better because we have all this stuff. When you really start looking at it, what we're really ending up doing, and this isn't in the article, but I've done another podcast on this idea, what we're really end up doing is we're going somewhat, not mostly, because somewhat is pure survival, but we're going and we're spending all this time in jobs so that we can earn this money, so that we can buy this stuff that serves as a distraction to distract us away from the tedium that is required of our lives by going to these jobs. When there are other models out there, and interestingly, those other models, I think, have pathways that perhaps would lead us to more meaningful lives. Although they may be more difficult lives. One of the things that struck me about growing up in a place like the Philippines was that the Filipinos had far less stuff, and yet in many ways they lived more contented lives. And I also think of like the Amish. They have far less stuff, but they live more contented lives. Well, why is that? Because they do meaningful work. You know, they live close to nature. Their lives are not compressed and hurried. The entertainment that they are consuming is not laced with things to make a person dissatisfied so that they will seek to fill that dissatisfaction with something else. I once told a friend that the purpose of television, fictional stories on television, is to pacify us long enough to where they can put us in an altered state of consciousness so that when the advertisements come on, you know, we'll be receptive to the advertising. My friend did not like that idea. That's why television exists. But it's true. Commercial television. Now, of course, PBS doesn't run commercials, but they're running more enhanced endorsement things. And in addition to that, of course, they get on, they run shows to hope you, to convince you that it's worthwhile for them to exist, so that then when they get on during their fundraisers, they can get people to actually give them money. So, you know, it's not like anybody is working for free, because we all need our jobs so we can make our money, so we can go home and get our food and buy our nice houses and buy our stuff. And it's just like this vicious cycle. He starts talking about, where am I here? Okay, so in this article, he talks about, you know, a lot of other things like advocates of sustainability, that we don't need to just be making more and more and more stuff, you know, that we need to do recycling, that they have kind of a different approach to that. And then he starts talking about, what if we would rethink the narrative of progress? What if we believed that inventions in and after the Industrial Revolution have made some things better, and with me paraphrasing, but also made some things worse? What if we adopted a more critical and skeptical view towards the values that we've inherited from the past? Moreover, what if we write environmental factors back into the story of progress? Suddenly, things begin to seem less rosy. And he goes through, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, those kind of things, CO2, contaminations of soil, the pollution of the earth. all these things, the fact that we are adding and adding and adding to the population of the earth, and the earth is not going to be able to sustain it. And sooner or later, we will have to pay for that. He says, when we take these trajectories into consideration, the Industrial Revolution starts to look less, something less than a divided blessing. It begins to look at best like a mixed blessing. We now have technologies that have allowed people to live longer, safer lives, but that has simultaneously destroyed global ecosystems, has caused the extinction of many living species, has facilitated rampant population growth, has wreaked havoc with our climate systems, the effects of which will be an increase in droughts, floods, storms, erratic weather patterns that threaten most global societies. And the author goes on to say, you know, all this is to say that this simple-minded idea that all this progress is great, maybe we need to rethink that a little bit. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Good. Let me just check down below. Ah, there it is. Okay. And he says, you know, there have been people all along the way that have championed this as well. He mentions the Luddites. He goes and lists a whole bunch of people that have questioned. And apropos for today, the Luddites, in fact, questioned the necessity of machines putting so many people out of work. And we'll get back to that in a minute, because, as you know, I think that's just going to continue, and it's just going to get worse. He says Engels questioned the horrendous living and working condition experienced by the working class and drew links between economic changes, social inequality, and environmental destruction. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. He said Thoreau questioned the need for modern luxuries. Mill questioned the logic of an economic system that spurred endless growth. Muir revalorized the natural world, which had been seen as little more than a hindrance to wealth creation and the spread of the European settler societies around the globes. His conclusion is, these figures have provided wisdom and intellectuals inspiration to the sustainability movement. John Stuart Mill and John Muir, for instance, have each been rediscovered in recent decades, respectively, by the ecological economist and environmentalist in search of a historical lineage. For the sustainability-minded thinkers of the present day, it was these figures and others like them that were true visionaries of their age. And so the upshot of all this is that, you know, it's really easy just to think more is better and technology will always provide solutions for us and isn't it going to be great? But as I've mentioned before, it's going to be fascinating to me to watch the development of all these different things, because I think what is ahead of us is not necessarily the best of times for humanity. We will get to a place where we cannot sustain our population growth. We will get to a place where I think there will be rampant unemployment because machines have replaced jobs. There will be a limiting factor, though, because if you have rampant unemployment, then the governments, if they try to support those people, will have to raise taxes, which will inhibit growth. And if a whole bunch of people are out of work, those people don't have any money to buy all the stuff we're making. So it's really interesting, the balance, to watch the balance and see how it will all develop out. It's going to be a fascinating thing to see how technology moves forward on all of this. And as I told my nephew and niece-in-law when we were on vacation. I am quite grateful that the world is what it is right now, because frankly, it's a pretty good time to be a white guy who's tall, who's involved in technology, information technology. I mean, that's a pretty good deal right now, because there's such a hunger in business to streamline their technological systems. And I really am grateful for that. And I'm grateful that if all things being equal in 10 years, it's going to look like I'm going to be able to retire comfortably and just write all the time, which is even better. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.